A headline in the current issue of Wired magazine poses the question, who's afraid of Google? The answer? Everyone. Video, e-commerce, software, telecommunications, wherever media and technology intersect, Google wants to be there. It's the interconnected future of our media, our economy, and our democracy. But is that what we want? The total omni-Googleization, as the French have called it, of our lives? Imagine the future 10 years from now, and the answer is unclear.
It is the best of times. It is the worst of times. In the year 2014, people have access to a breadth and depth of information unimaginable in an earlier age. Everyone contributes in some way. Everyone participates to create a living, breathing mediascape. However, the press, as you know it, has ceased to exist. The Fourth Estate's fortunes have waned. 20th century news organizations are an afterthought, a lonely remnant of a not too distant past.
The voice you hear is that of Matt Thompson, who a year ago co-created an 8-minute internet movie called Epic 2014, which lays out in chronological detail some important internet developments to date, and then imagines a future media landscape dominated by a single, and at least for now, fictional company called Googlezon. Matt Thompson joins me now. Matt, welcome to On the Media.
Thank you very much, Brooke.
So you created this movie while working at the Poynter Institute for Journalism. Where did the idea come from?
It was me and my friend Robin, who was also working at the Poynter Institute. We took a weekend, went to Miami, and he happened to bring along this speech from the CEO of the New York Times Digital, the kind of opaque, meandering speech. And we were going back and forth on what Martin Nisenholtz, the CEO, actually meant. And in the course of that discussion, we ended up coming up with this idea for what if news looked like this.
And you created a PowerPoint presentation for lectures. And then what happened?
Our audience then was mostly journalists, journalism professors, folks interested in journalism. And more than anything, we wanted to get people thinking about a really different model for what news could look like in the future. And at first, when we were presenting this, journalists were getting scared, but they weren't really taking it very far beyond that. So we mixed the presentation up a little bit and decided to present it as though this future that we imagined had already happened.
Today, in 2014, the New York Times has gone offline. In feeble protest to Googlezon's hegemony, the Times has become a print-only newsletter for the elite and the elderly.
That definitely changed the dynamics of the discussion a little bit. They stopped getting just scared and they actually started to think up solutions.
But then it started filtering out well beyond the journalistic community into the wider world. It became a kind of viral internet phenomenon. You must have been hearing from everyone.
A few months after Robin and I both left Poynter, we just kind of released the thing onto the internet, thinking, hey, a few journalists will pick it up and enjoy it. But it turned out to draw a lot of interest from not just journalists, but Australian medical professionals and software experts and people from privacy fields, people who were concerned about democracy in general. All of them found some sort of a hook to it.
Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of the movie. You begin with a kind of short history of the internet and its major players. Specifically, you talk about Google, Amazon, TiVo, and Friendster. Could you take them one at a time and briefly explain what it is all of these individual companies' technologies bring to the table?
We used Google mostly because of their search technology. And then for Amazon, the idea that people's recommendations could power a marketplace. We pulled in TiVo partially because of a statistic we heard that almost every person that uses TiVo ends up being won over by it. And Friendster was really the social networking component of it.
2007. Microsoft responds to Google's mounting challenge with NewsBotster, a social news network and participatory journalism platform. NewsBotster ranks and sorts news based on what each user's friends and colleagues are reading and viewing, and it allows everyone to comment on what they see.
That social networking layer we imagined doesn't really exist anywhere in news yet, and could have a really potent place.
NewsBotster combines all these evolving technology, and that sets the stage for the big imagined merger in 2008 of Google and Amazon.
Two companies that have been very prescient in how the web has worked. More than anything, honestly, the idea of Google's on as a name probably spurred us on as much as anything else.
And under the Google's on scenario, you imagine that news is gathered and disseminated almost entirely by computer, which, of course, Google News does now.
We did kind of leave in a human element. We did talk about a generation of freelance editors springing up, filtering the content to the tastes of their particular audience.
But I guess not enough of a human element to stave off what you call the news wars of 2010.
We really intended to tell journalists, look, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, all of these companies are playing in the same space that news organizations are. And if it's not until 2010 that we really begin realizing that, then we're out of luck.
The news wars of 2010 are notable for the fact that no actual news organizations take part. Google's on finally checkmates Microsoft with a feature the software giant cannot match. Using a new algorithm, Google's on's computers construct news stories dynamically, stripping sentences and facts from all content sources and recombining them. The computer writes a news story for every user.
It's the fact-stripping robots that work for Google's on that prompt the New York Times to sue the company in 2014, according to your scenario.
Yes. Ultimately, as I imagine it, one of the arguments that Google's lawyers end up making is that what Google is doing is essentially equivalent to what the New York Times does with its sources when it goes out and collects an interview. It's taking information that they freely provide and remixing it and compiling it into a news report. Google is merely taking this information that the New York Times makes publicly available and remixing it, compiling it into another news report.
The movie culminates with the creation of something called Epic. It doesn't sound like a good outcome for journalism.
Part of the thing about Epic is it describes a world that in many ways already exists.
Epic produces a custom content package for each user using his choices, his consumption habits, his interests, his demographics, his social network to shape the product.
If we're talking about a news product that's completely customized to our tastes and preferences, that's already what I have as my news product every day. The first place I go when I turn on my computer is to bloglines.com, where I pull in feeds from all the blogs that I've chosen. And what I've found is that my little news universe that I've made for myself ends up actually being more diverse, covering a broader variety of topics than generally my local newspaper does.
At its best, edited for the savviest readers, Epic is a summary of the world deeper, broader, and more nuanced than anything ever available before. But at its worst, and for too many, Epic is merely a collection of trivia, much of it untrue, all of it narrow, shallow, and sensational.
It sounds to me like you're standing on the fence on whether you think Epic is a good thing or a bad thing.
Definitely. I think Robin and I are both ambivalent about it. It is, like we say at the beginning of the presentation, the best of times and the worst of times.
Matt, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brooke.
Matt Thompson is a deputy editor of interactive media for that old dinosaur, the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, and Mike Volo, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director, and this week, Rob Christensen, our engineer. We had help from Katie Holt and Kevin Schlottman. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer, and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. The W.K. Kellogg Foundation, from vision to innovative impact, 75 years of philanthropy. and the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, online at mott.org, supporting efforts to promote a just, equitable and sustainable society. Support from the media comes from the Bidell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.